Alexander Jones live today, Thursday the 18th of April. On this edition, is China becoming a more open society? We discuss live in a moment. As a campaign video launches for the St Andrews Class Gift 2013, we speak to the person behind the scheme. There's just 24 hours to go till the Coalition for a Conflict-Free St Andrews puts on their event. We ask how the campaign is going. And finally, we speak to the 2012-13 Charities convener, Kelsey Gold, about this year's campaign. That's all here on Alexander Jones Live. And don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Mr. Jones News. So we turn our attention today first to China. And earlier this week, China revealed its military structures. This is the first time such sensitive information has been released in the single-party state. So is China becoming a more open country? And what could this mean for the global power's future? Shirley Zhang is a St Andrews student from China who's here in the studio with me. Thank you for joining me. So, do you think China is becoming a more open country then?
Well, in my opinion, I think it's probably a mistake from the start that the Western world is assuming that like China is becoming more democratic in the Western term, because I would say China has the institution like in China is very very different from the West, and according to historically, China went through a few kind of revolutions, which marked failures that like China cannot completely install a kind of partisan system within China's politics. For example, back in 1911, the 1911 revolution, which the leading figure Sun Zhongshan, he tried to install such kind of parliament system in China, but he failed because Chinese people, in their like cultural norms, they try to pursue a kind of common good instead of a competitive system between parties. So I think that's probably the cultural roots that why China cannot be explained as becoming more democratic in the Western term, because the political institution will never be the same.
But things are changing, aren't they? So whether it's in the Western model or not, this information about military structures being released, that's quite a change from how things have been.
Yes, I think the development of internet and the openness is becoming more like noticeable in Chinese politics nowadays. But one of the problems I found is, for example, Alex, I don't know if you know the Chinese microblog, the Weibo, which is a like Chinese version of Twitter, which is kind of like an alternative channel for Chinese people to discuss about political issue on internet. But that one, like to my knowledge, I think since its emergence, since like 2008, actually the control of public opinion has actually become more strict. For example, like we have more sensitive words on internet that people cannot search about. When you search it online, for example, like Baidu is the Chinese version of Google, then it turns out it says the word you search is against the local policy, something like that. So I guess although you could say, for example, some release of the military information could be a signal that Chinese politics is becoming more open. But I think in a single party system, there are lots of like political cultures cannot be changed in one day. And also, I guess people hasn't got used to like how to practice this kind of like imported norms of democracy in the daily life.
Because although Chinese culture might like to approach things from a different way to the West, yes, the internet, however much they attempt to block certain phrases that you can search and such, yes, like, it's very difficult for them to completely censor ideas on the web, and it certainly does expose Chinese people to things around the world that they've never before seen.
Yes. But I would say, I mean, the information online is being selected before they went to the public vision. And for example, if we compare between Twitter and the Chinese microblog, we can say that some people, like after the Arabic Spring, like some people might say the openness of China's internet might be might be a new channel for like Chinese people to know more about the world. But there's one thing we need to notice, that the central server of Twitter, it is in the States, but the central server of the microblog and all the like main website, the main Chinese website, is in Beijing. So the Beijing can actually like control everything and watch everyone's speech. So I guess that's probably, I would say, nowadays China is becoming more democratic in the way that they're trying to allow people to know more things. But on the other way, we should always like notice this kind of freedom might be, already been orientated for some specific purpose.
Do you expect that the Communist Party will be able to maintain their control over China throughout your lifetime, especially if there's more freedoms creeping in?
Yeah.
Will that actually hinder them doing that?
I guess there are a lot of more and more criticism like emerging in like Chinese internet nowadays. So I guess it's a challenge posed to the Chinese Communist Party. But I guess it's still a long way to go to make China become a completely democratic society, because first of all, the international society need to realize that China, there's some like in its nature, in its culture nature, that probably the pressure from the international society might be perceived as a threat to the Chinese people. So I guess in that way, I think China will become democratic in the near future, but now not completely in the Western term.
So what would Chinese democracy look like? There's a lot of talk of doing things the Chinese way at the moment. We hear about the Beijing consensus or things like that. So what could a Chinese model look like that's different from communism, but also, again, different from a Western democracy like a European or American country might have?
This is hard to predict, because I think what the Chinese Communist Party always, in public talk, they always emphasize we can build up like a democracy with a one-party system. So I don't actually know how that works, because all the norms of democracy I have learned is probably imported from the West. I guess the CCP is definitely allowing more criticism and more critical voices from the masses to talk about and to tell them how the masses think the politics should be like. I guess that's it's already a great step forward.
You were mentioning about the culture earlier and how there's very different things ingrained in the Chinese culture. Again, I just would question maybe whether that's the case in Europe, that certain countries are maybe suited to democracy and others aren't. Does culture evolve over time? Could it be that actually some countries that we currently consider as strong democracies, maybe their culture will evolve and they won't be considered to be as perfect for democracy, and maybe Chinese people will feel like actually it's something that suits them?
I guess that's possible. I agree with you that culture can evolve. I guess culture can evolve, but it also like largely based on the previous historical term and also experience. So I guess Chinese people might need more time to like practice on democracy and to like know more about it and like find the best way of it, just like how democracy has been like practiced in Europe and in the US.
Do you feel optimistic about the future of China? Do you think that whatever happens, actually, the country's going to get better?
I guess the country in some term is getting better because like people is getting more educated and is getting more involved in social affairs. But on the other hand, I also think that we should, like, as I have mentioned, that the international like pressure on China to push it to become more democratic, or this kind of hope might be a pressure for the CCP party, for the CCP party to, like, you know, feel to, you know, push them to secure their leadership more tightly. So I guess the Chinese society and the international society, they need to mutually, you know, understand each other more, and also work out the miscommunication between them on some like certain issues and norms. Because I guess for democracy, the understanding is pretty different, and that's the main problem, like the main miscommunication between the West and China.
And we've already talked a bit about the Beijing consensus and how China really likes to model things in a slightly different way. Do you think that actually we could see a Chinese model catching on across more of the world, and that this could almost create, I don't want to go as far as the Cold War and suggest that there'd be two blocks like that, but there'd be some sort of Chinese grouping of countries following its way of doing democracy?
Yeah, I guess China now is, because since the 1911 when the Chinese Empire ended, like China's gone through lots of like ideological like change through this like 100 years, and I guess now China hasn't really found like a very assured like ideology for the people to believe in after the Cold War, like you said, the breakdown of the communist ideology. So I guess economic development might make Chinese people think more openly, or think more openly onto, you know, the social issues instead of just, you know, thinking about making money and, you know, to make the life wealthier. But I guess it's hard to predict. Because we don't really have this kind of practice much before. So it's really hard to predict like how China will become. But I definitely think, you know, positive things is happening, and this probably will be a positive outcome in the future. But I'm not sure if it will be the same as how it happened in the West.
How much change have you noticed in China in your lifetime?
I guess that's a lot, because like the quick development of internet happened when I was like 10 years old, and I started to learn a lot like more and more through internet like after my primary school. So I guess that's a huge change, because before we only focused on textbook, but now whenever you want to know more about society or like read more about the news, you can always go to internet and search for it. But I also feel the differences quite strongly when I go back home, and you know, between like after I go back home from here, I feel like there are lots of website and like resources I cannot get access to, and it's strong feeling that the, you know, the resources that we can get in China is still very limited.
Finally, the internet's the thing that keeps coming up through this discussion, and in many ways is the big changing factor that we've seen.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to be the thing that actually revolutionizes China?
I will be, you know, rather be more conservative about that point, because I think Chinese internet is, because like Chinese journalism and also the Chinese netizen, they want more like free expression, the right to free expression. But also at the same time, during the previous experience, like, you know, during the previous time, their experience told them, you know, when they talk in a more open term, they have to censor their own speech before they post it, and it will cause some problems. So many of them are very cautious about what they're saying and like how they're saying are gonna, you know, cause problem.
Shirley, thank you very much for joining me here on the program. Thank you. And we turn our attention now to the 2013 Class Gift. In 2009, a new St Andrews scheme was established called the Class Gift and aimed to give graduating students, give something back to the university. This week, the campaign video for the 2013 Class Gift has been launched and Alex Thornton-Reed is leading the campaign. She joins me in the studio. Thank you for coming in.
That's great. Thank you for inviting me.
So what exactly does the Class Gift aim to do?
Well, this year we're trying to raise as much money as possible, and this year we've chosen our charity already, and that is the Students Association Bursary Fund. It's a new fund that's being set up by the Students Association as part of the 6-month anniversary, and we're trying to get £15,000 this year in order to secure an endowment, which would mean that we'd be able to give a prize fund of £600 every year to a student. Other years they've donated towards the Union Redevelopment and other such ideas as well. So it's really up to the committee of the year to decide what cause they're going to be raising the money for.
So it's just the committee, it's not a wider decision among people in your year?
Last year it was done by a vote, and they voted outside the library on which project of the university they would want to help, and they chose the Union Redevelopment. This year it was decided because of the 6-month anniversary, we'd support one of the 6-month anniversary projects, which is the Students Association Bursary Fund, and it was decided by the committee.
How much money are you hoping to raise?
Our aim is £7,000, and I really hope that we get more than that. That's a low aim for me. I really want to get as much as possible to be able to help the fund be established.
How many students will £7,000 help?
We've got to get to the 15,000 point, which will help one student as an endowment to be able to supply £600 a year. So £7,000 is going to go towards this £15,000, which other groups around the university are raising the money for. So the Your 600th Committee is raising money for to go towards this £15,000 as well. So the £7,000 is to not to just give to one student, but to be able to have an endowment so that we have a secure bursary that we'll be able to be supplied every single year.
And how many students in total do you think that will be able to support?
It depends how much money is raised. If we raise more money, we can help more students. So donate and then you can help more students. So yeah, it really depends. We can't really tell at the moment. It depends how much money is raised, how many students we can help.
But we are talking about quite a small number, presumably.
At the moment, yes. But obviously, it's a bursary fund that we want to carry on. And if more money is raised every year, then we can really help more and more students, up to 20 students at a time, which would be absolutely fantastic. It's just the beginning at the moment, so we've got to start off small. We can't go too big.
How much money was raised last year by the Class Gift?
Last year was raised about £7,000, which is why we hope that's our realistic aim for this year, because it was done last year. But we always hope to do better, and we're already doing better than the Class Gift we're doing this time last year already. So it's looking positive.
I'm sure that many people will graduate from here and feel like they've already given a lot of money to the university. Do you think that they have a moral obligation to continue supporting financially what's going on here?
I wouldn't say anyone has an obligation to to give back to the Class Gift, because that would be a bit mean to force people to do it. But I would say that personally people can feel very attached to this university. It's a large part of your life. It's really when you develop and you become who you are, really, and you find yourself here. And I think it's a time of our life that we're going to look back on and think, wow, that was really great fun. And I think that that's why we should give back to the university in this way, because we're going to be helping other students to be able to come and have the fun that we had as well. So it's not an obligation, but obviously I feel that people will want to and give back to the university, because I hope they've had a good time here and they want to help others have a good time too.
What sort of response have you been getting from fellow graduating students about this campaign?
It's been really positive. Everyone seems really enthusiastic. We had the Class Gift Cayley in Rag Week, with obviously in cooperation with the charity's campaign, and it was absolutely packed. It was a fantastic Cayley. Everyone really enjoyed it, and obviously all the money raised from that went towards the Class Gift total. So everyone seems to be really keen to support it and to come along and get involved in our events. And obviously the most crucial time for our Class Gift is during graduation week. That's the sort of climax of the campaign, and we hope people will be just as enthusiastic then as well.
So what's the running total then? You said you're aiming for £7,000. Yeah. How much has so far been raised from the events this year?
So far we've raised about £1,300.
Okay, so there's a lot to do before the end.
Grad week is always the week where you get the most. Like, grad week is the week for class gift. Money raised before, what we're meant to be doing beforehand is just raising awareness, and any money that we get during that time is absolutely fantastic. So this, the class gift this time last year was actually a lot less than that, so we're already doing a lot better through the Rag Week Cayley, really helped push our total up.
Okay, because I was intrigued about why you were releasing a video at this stage in the year to promote your campaign.
Yeah, it's because it's not really starting till Grad Week. Grad Week is when we hand out letters to the parents, and we really have a presence on the internet, and we are at every single graduation garden party. We'll be there saying hi to everybody, and we'll go around talking to people, and that's when we're really encouraging people to donate, because that is when they'll be graduating, that is when they're leaving, and that is when they want to give their gift back. So that's why we're releasing it now, because it's meant to be sort of getting in everyone's mindset ready for graduation week.
Are there more events that you're organising to try and raise money over the next few weeks?
We're having an event outside the library. It's not to raise money, it's to raise awareness again, so that people are getting class gift in their mind. We're going to be outside the library in week 11, which is next week. We're going to be having a voting thing, hopefully kind of like what they did last year when they voted for what money is going to go towards. Instead, what we're going to be doing is getting students, any student, not just graduating students, to vote for their favourite St Andrew's tradition. And that's just, again, to just raise awareness, and every time that someone comes forward and votes for their We Love Raisin Weekend, we can chat to them about class gift and just make sure that they're aware of what it is and what's going on. So it's raising awareness, not necessarily raising financial capital just yet. But you can donate at any point throughout the year. That is fine.
So I saw that you were doing this. So what would your favourite St Andrew's tradition be?
Oh, I really do love Raisin Weekend, because I like it's so obviously over a longer period of time, and I really like the academic family system of St Andrew's. I think it's really great and supportive, and I've had some fantastic memories from Raisin Weekend, and I think that would be one of my highlights of my time at St Andrew's, so I would pick that.
Will you miss being a student here?
Yes, I really miss being a student here, but I'm not stopping being a student, so it's fine. I'm going to a different place to carry on studying, so I'm good.
How many of you are there that are doing all these fundraising efforts, going to all the garden parties and trying to get people to give money?
The class gift committee itself consists of 4 people. So we're quite small this year. There was about 10 people in last year's committee. So we're 4 people, but we've got the support of the Your 600th committee as well in all of our activities. And down at the garden parties, we're hopefully going to get a few more people involved, and people who are interested in being part of the class gift next year might be able to come and help out with us during graduation week as well.
Does that suggest the fact that you do have a smaller committee, that actually there's less interest in this now?
No, because the way you get on committee is you do it through interview, and the people who chose the committee chose 4 people. There were more people who went, but it wasn't... Okay. Yeah.
So who was it that chose you to lead the campaign?
The positions on the committee are chosen by the committee. So we discussed amongst ourselves who we wanted to be chair, who we wanted to be vice chair, who we wanted to be in charge of publicity, and who we wanted to be in charge of the events. So that was a committee decision on who we felt would do best at those positions.
And who is it you mentioned as the interview panel to get onto committee? Who is it that did that?
It is the Development Office, and also Freddie Ford, the President of the Students' Association, are in on deciding who they think would be part of the Class Gift Committee. And we're hoping in the future that also members of the current Class Gift Committee will be able to help have an influence on who will be coming in the following year, because they know exactly what that has to be done and what needs to be done, so they would be the best people to sort of talk about that and find the new people.
What sort of sums of money do you expect individuals to donate? Is this largely, well, you mentioned about handing stuff to parents as well, you know, yeah. Is this parents writing a check for £1,000,
or
is
this
individuals giving you a 2p here and there?
Well, what we've got is, we've got a number that you can text, and so if you text 70070, you text the letters GRAD, so GRAD 13, numbers 13, pound sign 5, that donates £5. And you can do the same for £10. So you can send texts, and that's last year they got 100 of these texts for £5. So that's one way that people can do it. The other way is to give sums of donation, and obviously that completely depends on the donator, how much they want to give. We wouldn't have a standard amount. We'd encourage any amount at all.
You obviously stood for president.
Yes.
And didn't win the election. Do you think that that experience helps or hinders you in doing this? Does that make any difference to the way that other students perceive you?
I don't know. I was already chair of class gift from October, and I've been working hard throughout that time, and people knew me as the chair of class gift before the elections. And I think that it might help the class gift to have a higher awareness. I don't know. But I really enjoyed it. I thought that it actually gave me great confidence and all that sort of stuff, which I think will really help the rest of the campaign for Class Gift for the rest of the year.
Alex Lunton-Reed, thank you very much and good luck to you. Still to come on the programme today, we will be speaking to the director of the Coalition for Conflict Free St Andrews. That conference is coming up this weekend, and we'll be asking him how it's going. That's in just a few moments. And then later on, we'll be looking back at the charities campaign this year. You've been hearing just now from Alex Thornton-Reed about the Class Gift fundraising exercise, and we're going to be hearing from Kelsey Gold, who is the Director of Student Development elect, and She's been the last year in charge of the charities campaign, and she'll be talking to us about that a little later on in the programme. But for now, it's coming up to 5:30, so time for the latest from Star News.
Explosion at Fertilizer Plant in Texas.
Cycling legend Sir Chris Hoy announces retirement. We're just going to carry on ahead here anyway. With the 5:30 Star News, I'm Candace Stevenson.
And I'm Teddy Woodhouse. Between 5 and 15 people are thought to have been killed by a massive explosion at a fertilizer plant in central Texas yesterday evening. Officials in the rural town of West have said that search and rescue efforts are ongoing, and at least 160 people have been treated for injuries so far. The blast, which leveled nearby homes and businesses, is being investigated as a crime, although Sergeant William Swanton said there are no, quote, no indications that this was anything other than an accidental fire.
A bipartisan compromise that would have expanded federal background checks for firearms purchases in the United States has been rejected by the Senate. The defeat of the measure by a 54-46 vote marks a major setback for gun control advocates, many of whom had hoped Congress would act to curb gun violence in the wake of December's Newtown Elementary School massacre. The expanded background checks were aimed at closing loopholes and keeping criminals and the seriously mentally ill from getting firearms. Currently, the checks only apply to purchases handled by licensed firearms dealers.
Six-time Olympic gold medalist Sir Chris Hoy announced his retirement today. The Scottish cyclist has been competing for nearly two decades and said he knew he was, quote, good, but not good enough to win a medal at the 2014 Commonwealth Games in Glasgow. Hoy is Britain's most decorated Olympic athlete and is seen as an icon in British sport.
A new smartphone app is hoping to prevent Icelanders from accidentally sleeping with their relatives. The Icelandic population is very small, and all Icelanders are technically related, even though they might not know each other. A group of three engineers have developed an app that uses information from an online registry, the Book of Icelanders, to help people determine just how close they might already be with that cute person at the bar. The engineers suggest people, quote, bump the app before they bump in bed.
And finally, the weather. Tonight, rain's clearing after dark, cold with a touch of frost. Tomorrow, much brighter and dry, with some sunny spells and light winds.
And those are today's headlines. For more news, tune into our bulletin tomorrow at 5:30 or online anytime on the news section of the Star website.
You want to hear?
You're listening to Alexander Jones Live here on St Andrew's Radio, and already on this programme we've been talking about Chinese politics. Is China becoming a more open society? We were discussing that at the start today. And then in the last few minutes we were speaking to Alex Thornton-Reed, the chair of the Class Gift Campaign, and she was telling us a bit about what's going on with that. There's just 24 hours to go till the conference organised by the Coalition for Conflict-Free St Andrews begins. You may remember hearing them on this programme back in February outlining their plans, and today they're back to talk to us a bit about how it's going with, as I say, just 24 hours to go till the conference. How are preparations going then? How is everything on course for the conference tomorrow?
Yeah, it's going to be great, and I hope you'll be there, you yourself and your producer. I'm Callum Bryce. I'm the advocacy coordinator of the Coalition for Conflict-Free St Andrews. We were selling tickets today outside of the library. I sold 3, and then a girl beat me and sold 9 in one go. It's going well. We've got some very, very exciting speakers coming up. We've got people flying in from around the world to come and hear what has been described by people within Divinity School here as the largest conference on the conflict, at least in Congo, that's ever been held in Britain.
How many speakers do you have coming?
There are 2 keynote speakers in Gerard Brunier and Hun Lassenroot. None of us can pronounce it. Some are saying Hun, some are saying Cohen. I'm saying Hun because it sounds more Dutch. I think we've got about, in the tens, people who are going to be on panels, who are going to be discussing things. We've got a lot of roundtable discussions, a lot of panels on the role of women. We've got loads of great people coming. We sent a few people organised who we were going to be inviting, and essentially everyone we wanted basically got back and said, we'd love to come.
So I remember asking this back in February, but do you maybe want to just explain again to our listeners actually what the coalition is, who's in it?
Okay, the coalition was something set up last year. It's a coalition of about 15 different societies in St Andrews, essentially all human rights or environmental societies, just came together last year to petition, I think we've got about 2,000 signatures, the university to change its procurement policy regarding conflict minerals. And we were actually the first university, because of the campaign, in Britain to change the procurement policy. Exeter, I think, became the second, and they were the first in England. And I was chatting to a friend in Cambridge who's at Cambridge University, saying they're trying to do something similar as well.
So this is quite a vague grouping of different people, isn't it? What is it that holds you all together? Just this? Is this a temporary campaign? Or?
It's temporary, and that hopefully the war in the Congo might end soon. That would be nice. But it's been described as, by Bennett, who's in the coalition, so I'm not no one particularly seen yet, as, the South Africa of our generation. It's a campaign that kind of unites people. It's not something like Israel-Palestine that divides people. It's so some human rights groups might side with Israel, some might side with Palestine. It's hard. We're not particularly taking any sides on the issue, but it's something that everyone can agree needs to be stopped, and it's something that we can all agree we can actually play a positive role in.
So the conference starts tomorrow evening, goes on 24 hours. It's Saturday through the day as well. How many tickets have been sold at the moment?
I'm not sure how many have been sold as of yet. I think we've got... I sold 3 in an hour earlier.
I'm presuming there's significantly more than 3 coming.
There's significantly more that have been sold online. I think it was around 150 been sold last time I asked a few days ago. And then we've been selling outside the library. We've had some success, despite the fact that the banner, which we paid £80 for, blew away.
Can't trust Scottish weather.
Yeah.
Do you think that £25 is a reasonable price for a conference like this?
I think it is when you factor in how many fantastic speakers are coming from, across the globe to come and address this issue. And St Andrews students, there are always fantastic talks on. A lot of them are on for free or they're on for £3, but you'll never see this many great speakers come to, let's face it, St Andrews isn't exactly London. It's a coup that we managed to get people up to, the east coast of Fife. And £25, particularly when you're considering the fact that we paid so much for these people to come. The conference, it's not come cheap. In fact, £25 could be seen as a bargain when you consider everything's gone into it.
Do you think that the price is possibly putting people off the conference?
I've heard that from a lot of people. I've heard, I'm broke and stuff. But essentially, if you're £25 in terms of education, most of the people here are not yourself, Scottish accent, but
most I'm surprised you can hear it.
Most of the people here are, to some extent, paying for their education. That, I mean, I've got flatmates and stuff who are essentially paying thousands of pounds per lecture or class that they go to. So £25 to educate yourself at 24 hours of things that you would not get to hear otherwise doesn't really seem that much when you think about it.
The reason I'm questioning it is just purely on the fact that there's so many campaigns by students against fees and against paying for various parts of their academic education, and it seems that, well, this is exactly what is being encouraged here.
Exactly. I mean, I last time I was on the show, I was saying there should be no tuition fees. Liz Richardson's comments were completely disgraceful, but I mean. This isn't an ideological thing. We're not saying no students should have to pay. We would love to make this conference something free for everyone to come to, but that's not financially feasible.
Okay, so let's touch the finances then. How is the conference being financed?
It's I don't actually have the exact numbers in front of me, but we've got grants. Christian Aid gave £1,000. Law Society, as the president of Law Society was just telling me, gave several hundred pounds. It's a lot of donations from Indiegogo, which is a place you can raise funds on the internet. It's all from a lot of different places. I think the Society's Committee has given quite a bit from the union, and the SRC, the Student Representative Council, gave £1,000 recently. Part of that money was to provide money for an art installation that came from the discretionary budget of the SRC.
And am I right in thinking that the university have some funding in the event as well?
I think they do. As I said, I don't have the figures to hand.
I think have put £500 into it. That's my understanding. Yes.
The School of IR has given money and quite a bit of support, actually. And Ian Taylor and Hazel Cameron from the School of IR will be speaking in it, and a lot of other people will be in attendance from the School of IR. Okay. And they've actually helped to advertise it a fantastic amount.
There's been some suggestion that the conference is actually in quite a lot of debt at the moment, and that the money hasn't been raised that is required to stage the conference. Is there any truth to those claims?
As I said, I don't have the finance in front of me. I think it's all going to work out. It's going to be fine.
You're confident of getting the ticket sales to keep it going?
I'm very confident that it will be fine, yes.
Okay, that's very good to hear. And there's a lot of societies involved here. Where does liability actually lie if it doesn't get financed as you wish?
It's with the coalition. The coalition has a bank account.
Okay.
So it's not the societies on board.
And who is it that is that actually holds authority over the coalition? Because it's not formed like a society, is it? Because it's a strange entity.
It's a bizarre umbrella entity campaign. Bennett Collins is the director. We've got a few coordinators. I'm advocacy coordinator, and then we've got a subcommittee that's helped organise and the conference itself, and we'll be there ushering and helping people on the day.
Are guests now starting to come in for the weekend? Is it all kicking off?
I assume so. I mean, a lot of people, if they're flying from across the world, from around the world, will be flying in today, and we've got a lot of people, particularly the people who we paid to fly in, I think being greeted tomorrow at Edinburgh Airport.
Do you think that there's a general sense of excitement about this? You know, we've heard a lot over the coming weeks, over the previous weeks here in St Andrews, about what's going on, a lot of people trying to persuade you to buy tickets and stuff. Do you think that actually the town's quite realised that what's going on?
I'd like there to be the same buzz of excitement that there would be for a ball, but unfortunately, that's not quite the nature of a conference or about an issue that most people in St Andrews wouldn't have heard about. I'd hope that there are a lot of people who are very excited. A lot, just manning the ticket stall, you see a lot of people coming up and saying, "Do you have tickets left?" Who are very, very keen, very excited. And a lot of people don't really know what's going on in the Eastern Congo. Didn't really know. Some people don't know there's a conference going on. You're always going to have people who aren't too informed. But then I think most people will have heard that there is something going on. I went around town putting up 30 posters, and there are posters everywhere. So I hope they wouldn't. And Facebook's been bombarded with it. And actually, everyone's received three emails from Freddie. And then if you do IR, you will have received about five.
Yes. And I remember when I spoke to Bennett back in end of February, and actually in many ways the key question is, much as everyone agrees with nice sentiments about ending conflict in the DRC, are you willing to pay more for your iPhone or BlackBerry or computer or whatever it is that has these conflict minerals in them?
I think the issue right now is that every piece of technology, we're sitting in a room with, I was about to say, very expensive equipment, but looking around, I don't think it's particularly expensive. The keyboard looks relatively, pretty dirty.
The mics
seem relatively new. I mean, we're... You know, every piece of equipment, every phone, every mobile has conflict minerals in. It's very hard to find a piece of technology that doesn't at the moment. But I do think that if people were educated and informed, they would. But it's the same sort of dilemma that most people would go to H&M rather than spend £10 extra on something that wasn't made by slave labour with unorganic cotton. I think it's a case of education to some extent, but it also has to do with EU and UK legislation so that there aren't conflict minerals. That's essentially the crux of the matter.
St Andrews isn't known as being a revolutionary place. Do you think that, in particular, EU law can be changed from events going on here?
I think, yeah. Students lobbying have always changed things. I'm not saying that... I mean, you know, students in Egypt played a massive role in the revolution. I don't think St Andrews students could quite play that sort of role in East Fife, but I do think that students do have a massive role to play in lobbying politicians and changing public opinion.
And how much support have you been getting from local politicians, from even national politicians, for this event that's going on?
David Martin sent everyone that wrote to him when we wrote to him. Wrote back about it fantastically. I don't think he's actually able to come to the conference, but he was very supportive of the movement. The Green Party have been very supportive. Min Campbell, unfortunately, couldn't make it. Wrote quite an apologetic letter. Lewis Richardson's been a bit useless, to be honest.
Why? That's quite interesting.
Just hasn't really helped too much.
And she's not interested. IR is her area
You think, but she will not be coming.
Okay. And do you feel under-supported by her, then? Is that a sense of resentment in the coalition?
The School of IR has been fantastic. And other people within the university and the union have been great.
Best of luck with the conference. Thank you very much for joining me in the studio. It's been great to have you here.
Thank you.
The Charities campaign in St Andrews is known over the past years for its success and has raised constantly high amounts of money. In 2012-13, it's raised £108,079. Get that right. That sounds like quite an achievement. And leading the campaign over the past year has been Kelsey Gold, and she joins me now in the studio. Thank you very much for coming in.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So, how do you go about raising this sum of money?
It's really a very collaborative process. We have some major events such as Race 2, which takes place in January, and Rag Week, which is in February, but we also have a lot of smaller events over the course of the year. We have cloakrooms, we have bake sales, we just had a hummus sale on Monday at the library. We have various events. We had Secret St. Andrews this year. We also just had our summer fair, but that only represents a portion of what is raised. It's a substantial portion, but there are also large contributions from the charitable societies in St. Andrews and students who put on their own initiatives. We had two students run marathons for the 6 months this year, so it's a big group of people all coming together, and it's a total that's rising still every day.
And which charities are you supporting in the campaign?
This year we supported Maggie's Cancer Caring Centre, Fife and Edinburgh, RNLI, CHAS, Macmillan Cancer Support, MSF, and Families First. But next year, and we've already had our charity elections, next year we're only supporting three charities, and they are Maggie's, Macmillan, and MSF. I almost forgot there.
And it got done through a student ballot, I'm right in thinking.
Yes. It's been six charities for the past several years, but after an extensive survey and consultation with students decided they wanted to support fewer charities through the nominations process so that more money could go to each charity, but there was also more scope for supporting alternative charities throughout the year. So yeah, it was a student-wide ballot, and we had over 1,000 students vote in the elections this year.
I see you've got a piece of paper in front of you with the massive figure of £1,015,000, which has been raised over the past 20 years by the Charities Campaign. Now, seeing over £100,000 from 1 year and 20 years, £1 million, I can presume it's going up a lot every year.
Yes, it is. Even just 10 years ago, they were raising roughly maybe £15,000 a year, which is still a major achievement. But the campaign has changed a lot over the last 4 years. In my first year here, we raised roughly 60,000, so it's been going up and up, and that's largely due to the professionalism within the campaign. Rag Week raised over £23,000 this year. Race 2 raised over £30,000. But it's also due to the influx of charitable societies and their more active involvement in raising money throughout the town.
Do you think it's possible to continually raise more and more money every year, or have we reached a ceiling now?
I think that it is possible to raise more, but I also think that it's important to focus on how we're raising money, raising awareness for the charities that we're supporting so that people know where the money is going. Because the Charities Campaign, while fundraising is our first goal, it's also largely about supporting student development and make sure that they have the skills after graduation. And so I think that we hit over £100,000 for the first time last year. And I kind of think that it will plateau being just over 100,000 for the next couple of years. And I think that's rightly so. I think that students can now kind of focus differently within the campaign, if that makes sense.
How involved do you think your average student feels in the campaign?
I think the Charities Campaign is certainly one of the biggest subcommittees that we have at the university. And I think a lot of students are at least aware of what it is and what it does. We have at least 300 active volunteers. We have several hundred more. I think we have over 2,000 people on the mailing list. So we have a lot of awareness. But in terms of like regular active involvement, I would say around 200.
Is that a bit of a failing that not more people are involved in it? Because again, in many ways, if you can raise £100,000 with 200 active members, then if you've got over 7,000 students involved, is there not potential to do a lot more?
I think that the Charities Campaign is wonderful because you can dip in and out as you'd like. We sold over 4,500 tickets to Rag Week events alone this year, so that's quite a few students. We have 200 racers who race across Europe. We had over 700 people at our first ever ball just last Saturday. So I think that what's great about the campaign is that you don't have to be an active member throughout the year, that we totally support you supporting your own charities and coming into the campaign as you like. So we're here to be a body, and we'd love for as many people to get involved as possible, but we're certainly not here to force anyone.
And if we're looking at the charities chosen to support, there's a local one, mm-hmm. a national one, and an international one. Yes. Do you think that's the right balance to maintain?
I believe so. I think it's crucial that we continue to support our local community, and I really support students getting more involved in volunteering locally. I think it's great to know where you're from and how we impact the community around us. But as we have such a large international community and obviously a large UK community, I think it's also important to recognize those areas. I also think by only having three that there's a lot more scope for students to choose charities that they specifically have a passion for and kind of display that to the rest of the university as well.
What sort of ideas do you get from students who are wanting to do things to raise money? Do they come forward to you with wacky ideas to say, skydive, or I come up with something to you, or are you finding that you're actually having to go around and say to people, could you please do this? We need people to make up the numbers.
I think the campaign has been going through a major transition this year, and we found over the past couple of years it was getting a little bit formulaic. We were like, we have our event one in semester one, and then we're preparing, then we have race two, then we have Rag Week, and I think that's great that we have these traditions that we've built up over the years, but it was discussions that we had at length this year about how we wanted there to be a little bit more spontaneity, a little bit of more students coming to us saying, we have this fantastic idea, are you able to support us? So the Charities Campaign next year will be very different than the campaign that I've overseen this year, and that it will act more as an umbrella. There's more opportunities for individual societies to come. And Rag Week next year, instead of being like, we have a set amount of events, this is what's going to happen next year, individuals, societies, etc. can come and they can pitch ideas and then we can fund them. So I'm excited to see how that goes, but I also think it's really important that we keep our traditional events going as well.
Is there a huge danger with that by actually waiting for people to come to you more and by not doing the things that have worked to an extent, £108,000 this year, record amount, do you think that next year there's a real danger that actually people could just not come forward because they maybe aren't aware of the opportunities that are there?
I don't think so, because I think our campaign has grown incredibly this year. We have a committee of over 60 people. The executive committee has 12, and then there's a supportive committee underneath them. And a lot of them have great ideas that, unfortunately, due to the kind of a little bit restrictive nature of our set calendar, we weren't able to support. So I think that it will be a challenge, but I believe the new convener, George Parker, and the rest of the committee that will be elected on Monday will do a fantastic job, and they will do what is in the best interest of the campaign, but most importantly, what's in the best interest of the students.
How successful do you think Rag Week is as an event? Do you think people actually feel engaged in it, and that it's actually something that people want to be part of, or is it a bit of a nuisance?
It's funny that you ask, because Rag Week is something that I'm incredibly passionate about. I was the Rag Week officer, I was then the Rag Week coordinator, and then that's how I really got involved in charities. And I think that Rag Week is fantastic. It really connects us to other universities, because lots of universities have Rag Weeks, so we learn from each other and we can talk about these ideas. But it's also a great way for students who maybe aren't involved in the campaign throughout the rest of the year to say, all right, this is Charity Week, like this is what I want to get involved in. It's also a wonderful opportunity for us to collaborate with our fellow subcommittees. Debates put on an event. We work very closely with Music is Love on their music event, and we especially work very closely with the Ents crew, without which Rag Week certainly could not happen. So we look forward to it every year.
Quick point on one of those there. Have students in St Andrews not voted to avoid working with other universities and to actually avoid... Yeah, that's particularly what I'm pointing to. There seems to be, in fact, a lot of opposition in many St Andrews groups to affiliating to national bodies or working with other universities. People are quite independently minded here, aren't they?
I think we really like to do the way things that we do them, certainly. But I know through the changes that we have, again, in the campaign this year, one of our new positions, we've always had a sponsorship coordinator, but now it's called the Sponsorship and Development Coordinator. And their job is specifically to liaise with other charities' campaigns, to learn with them. We're also going to be attending the RAG conference for the first time in several years this September. So I think the charities campaign is doing more to reach out, which may be at odds with the rest of the student body. But I think that there are a lot of opportunities to learn from other universities, even if we're not in a major political body at the NUS.
Now, you are also Director of Student Development and Activity elect, DOSDA. What do you think you've learned from your role this year as Charities Convener that you can take into that next year?
The role of Charities Convener is a very interesting one, especially coming from a different role on the Executive Committee, in that I suddenly no longer had anything that was specifically my project. It's very much a managerial role. I look after a 12-person Executive Committee who then look after a 30-plus committee underneath them. So my job is largely about making connections, making sure everyone's communicating well, being there to support students and help make their events and activities the best they can be. And I really see DASA as an extension of that role. My role will specifically oversee the old role that I had as well, so my experience in charities will help there. But I'm excited to get to work with the different subcommittees. I also have already been sitting on Societies Committee, so I've been learning a lot, but I really think the skills I've learned in overseeing large groups of students will continue to DOSDA.
What do you hope to achieve in your year as DOSDA?
One of the major things I hope to achieve is actually going to be coming up very soon, so a preview, is about something called Association Projects. Well, it will be pitched that way. And it is a different framework for groups that don't fit within the subcommittee or society structure, and it's something I campaigned on, and it's something I'm excited to kind of put before the SRC and the SSC to see if they agree with me. I also think that one of my major projects is the website, so we've already begun looking at things for that, and I'll mostly be working on that in May, so I'm really hoping to get that up and running from Freshers Week. And societies are a major priority for me as well. I really think we have a lot of work to do with societies, but the new societies coordinator, Courtney Lewis, is fabulous, and I'm already working very closely with her. So we have a lot to do, but I'm looking forward to it.
Association projects, I think, is an interesting one. Again, particularly on the last interview that we were actually having on this programme, Coalition for Conflict Free St Andrews, which I'm sure you know far more than me about being on all the committees, but we were discussing about how there are a number of tensions there, and there have been a number of problems, partly because it's not really constituted as a workable group, because it's a coalition of different societies. Mm-hmm. Is there something, if next year, do you find ways that you could work with them, maybe?
The association project framework is evolving, and I do not believe that the coalition would specifically fit within that framework, but I think that the coalition is a wonderful example of student initiative on something that doesn't fit exactly into the association's framework, and it is something that we need to be more flexible on. I'm very excited for the conference this weekend, and I wish them the absolute best of luck. But I would be also one of the first to say that there has been a number of difficulties. I've been on the committees that have been working with the coalition. I'm not actually on the coalition committee, about funding and other things. And it is a challenge for something on such a large scale in St. Andrews, and it's something that we're continuing to work on. I'm in a meeting with them right after this, actually. So
fun. And what sort of things do you think you could do as DOSDA next year to try and actually heal those relationships and to try and improve the way that the union may be perceived? Because there wasn't much love lost when speaking to our previous guest.
Oh, interesting. I'll listen to that later. I think that the association is flawed, but it is a fabulous institution. And I think that, obviously, if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't have run for one of the static positions. And I believe that's important that students are aware of what the association is capable of, but also aware of the limitations and how to go about fitting in to that framework. Because there are a lot of things that could have been done and could be done in the future to make things easier. I think I'll leave it at that.
Kelsey Gold, thank you very much for coming on the programme.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that does bring us to the end of another edition of Alexander Jones Live. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Mr. Jones News. And we'll be back next week at the same time. The whole programme will be available as a podcast on the St. Andrews Radio website very shortly, so do take a listen back there if there's anything that you missed. And remember, there's more daily from Star News at 5:30. But for now, I'm Alexander Jones. Thank you very much for listening. Good night.
Tune in to Star, University of St. Andrews radio station.
St. Andrews' only radio station.
This is Star.
Contact us here at the studio by buzzing the studio from www.standrewsradio.com.